Welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast, where we amplify the stories of regular people practicing anti-racism in their everyday lives. Every single one of us has the ability to create real and meaningful change right where we are. I'm your host, Carrie Sawyer, and I've got the stories to prove it. I can't wait to introduce you to these people, these change leaders, people who saw a need and decided to take action. To me, this is so inspiring, showing the powerful idea of everyday activism. I hope that you take away at least some small inspiration and use it to act and create more good in your world too. Let's get started, y'all. Hello and welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast. My name is Carrie. I'm your host and I am so happy that you are here with us today. In today's episode, I am going to have an incredible conversation with another amazing mind, a good friend of mine, Corey Sewell. Now, Corey and I met when we worked together at Qualcomm, and it's funny because we actually were both at University of Michigan at the same time and knew a lot of the same people, but never actually met. And I think that is because we were destined to be fast friends, co-conspirators, and co-collaborator in this area of like STEM and underrepresentation and really changing what that looks like. Corey is the founder of Hands-On Education and Hands-On Technology, which is based out of San Diego, California. Now, this is a company committed to empowering youth through mobile technology and the practical application of computer science. Corey runs really incredible and engaging and interactive after-school programs and summer programs for kids learning tech. They sound so cool sometimes that I'm like, can I please take that class? Things like choose your own adventure coding camps and how to do YouTube videos and all these different things that just really engage and inspire kids at the same time that it's teaching them valuable coding and valuable tech skills and learning how to learn, right? Corey is what I consider to be really a great engineering mind and also like just a great people mind because he is always coming up with ideas and projects to make the experiences of people better. And so Corey has a bachelor's degree in computer science. He has a master's degree in computer science and computer engineering. He also has a PhD in computer science and engineering. And so I really just admire him. And I think that he is a fantastic person because he's always using his unique talents and skills to do what he can to make the world better. And if you think that like you're a busybody, like Corey is the busiest of the busybodies. He's always doing something, always going a million miles a minute, and is always super positive about all the things that he is about and what he's doing. He has worked at some of the world's top tech companies, including Intel, Qualcomm, and Apple. And I am just so excited to introduce you to Corey Sewell and get at this conversation that we're going to have today. Let's go. Hi, Corey. Welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for inviting me. I appreciate that. You know, long time coming, but you know, we always have this conversation. So let's formalize it and get it on Inclusion First.
Yes, absolutely. So Corey, tell people who you are, just like really briefly.
Oh man, you know, because that's a very abstract question. Like, who am I, right? Like the meaning of life going on right now. But I am now comfortable calling myself, I'm Dr. Corey, so Dr. Corey Sewell. I am a engineer, entrepreneur, philanthropist, activist, right? Here we go. I got my bachelor's in computer science from UC Riverside, got my PhD, or my master's and PhD from University of Michigan, both also in computer science. While there, just took up it was kind of like a labor of love and necessity type of passion for teaching. And then, you know, when you're in college, you gotta, you know, how are you gonna eat? You're gonna get pizza every day. You're gonna find a way to get some other things happening. So tutoring, teaching, doing all that stuff. And it rolled into, you know, when I finished school, outside of, you know, my professional engineering life, I started like a summer camp for kids, a tech summer camp. And that just kind of grew and grew and grew. So now I have kind of these dual worlds happening where I'm like, hey, professional engineer, and going from Michigan, you know, going, working at Qualcomm, working at Apple. And then I have this other labor of love that's like, hey, I love to do things that helps the community and promotes education and promotes all of the community empowerment, but through what I feel like is my skill set, which is tech and all that goodness. And being excited about it, I probably would say it's like a skill in itself. So that's who I am. That's what I do outside of, hey, I love the Lakers. I love the 49ers. I love coaching my kids' teams. I'm now a golf addict. So I'm trying to, you know, figure out how to play this crazy game. So all that stuff, I'm just go, trying to have life and trying to help people at the same time.
Yeah, I love you, Corey. You're amazing. I feel like when I think about myself and my like busybodiness, like when I look at you, I'm like, this dude is like the busiest. Like he's doing so many things and so many like amazing things. Like you're living like 16 lives. Like most people pick one of those and be like, yep, that's what I do.
You're that's
like,
what I do.
This and this. And you're doing them all really well, which is amazing. So
I'm glad somebody said that. Somebody said I'm doing it really well. Sometimes in the moment, you don't feel like, you feel like, what am I leaving on the table? But I think eventually you just accept that this is like your essence of just, that's what you like to do, obviously, since you keep doing that. So yeah, I'm going to try to do everything. I'm going to try to do all the work I can, try to spend all the family time I can. You know, I'm going to do all the sports. I'm going to max out. I tore my ACL twice. I told you this, right? I tore my ACL twice playing basketball. Did I tell you this?
No.
Qualcomm, I was like, I'm getting my basketball game back. So I was just like, you know, like I'm Kobe now. I'm back. And so like I started playing. Now, I didn't. So this is a great conversation for here because in my office, I didn't know any, like it was nobody who was on my culture. So it was like I couldn't have conversations about, you know, what I like. I like hoop. I like balling. And then so they had like a lunchtime work group. When I went out there and I played with them, you know, and then, you know, first time was rough because they kind of were like not liking me because like it was like a, it's like an initiation. It's like, can you play and can we talk trash to you and all this stuff? And then so we did that for a minute and then I was part of the crew at some point. And so we played every single lunch. That was what I used to get like, look, once it hits 11:30, I get off, I go to the gym, I change my clothes, I'm warming up, we have our lunchtime games. So I'm playing and then the interns came and I was like, interns, I'm gonna beat you down. So then I was playing with the interns and then I started like an employee versus intern tournament at Qualcomm because I was just so into it. And then, you know, we had all this stuff and I was just playing. And then I started playing in the men's league at the community center down the street. And I was just playing more than I played since like high school. And one fateful day, I tore my ACL. And I was like, no. And then, but it was all born out of, I wanted that community out. I couldn't get in my office or anywhere else. It was like, I had friends. And I had friends that understood me, that were like, that look like me, that kind of talk, you know, at least maybe not like me, but like we shared all that stuff.
Yeah.
I was on the court. And so I had all these friends in San Diego, not from my work. It was just, we played basketball and we started hanging out and doing all these cool things. And so that made me tear my ACL because I was too into it because I want to be good now. I don't want to just be out there. And then I came back, did all the rehab. And what happened? I got to play like three times and I tore it again. Again, and I was like, I actually shed a tear, and I was like, I can't believe it. I'll just have to be passionate about the next thing, and so now it's golf.
Well, there's much less ACL tearing, so I'm here. So, and no, I mean, I love that because it shows like your propensity for like connecting people, for still clearly being a busybody up in these streets.
Yep, yeah.
But even connecting like people, like the interns versus the employees, like bringing different groups together.
Yeah, that was fine. That was
super. You can see throughout the way, you know, the time that I've known you. So Corey, I want to talk about activism. I want to talk about anti-racism, and I want to know, like, to you, what does it mean to be an activist in 2021?
You probably get people that always say, that's a good question, because they're trying to figure out what they answer. Like, that's a good question. Yeah, like, oh my goodness, that's a good question, right? And I'm trying not to say it, but that's a good question. I think first off, I never put myself in that category up front. I think you said like activist, anti-racist, like somebody who's like actively pushing. I kind of put myself into, just when I started off, right? Like, you know, I remember going through all of, I don't know, school. Like, I remember getting to, when I was an undergrad, I was in this program called UC Leeds, and it was to promote diversity and in the field of, you know, just professors, and like, can we have more diversity professors? And I was like, yeah, that's cool. And like, so like, I remember that thing happening, and I went through that program that helped me get to Michigan. I remember Michigan, I did other programs, and I think I got like a Rackham Merit Scholarship or something. I like to think I was good. And hey, we're going to help diversity people too. So this is amazing. Right. And so I always had a very strong push. Like, I need to do something to kind of give back and like push for from whatever I have. And so that's why I never thought about it as me being activist. Because when I think activist, I think like, oh, you know, and Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, I don't know, even on a level like Maya Angelou, like those are like people who are like activists, Barack Obama, like you do things. And I felt like, you know what? I got this small piece that I kind of do. And so that turned into, I can help kiddos. And I was like, what's the best contribution I can have? And so for me in this day and age, it was like, there's a lot of like momentum for, I guess, activism and, you know, Black Lives Matters, all that stuff like that, which is great. And but even before that, I was always saying, what's the best I can do? And I was like, well, if you want to get more, you know, Black people, if you want to get more diversity in engineering, how can we do that? And I've done all these things. I was like, well, what if I'm just like really good and I'm the manager? And then like, what if I can just like hire people? Right? Like, what if I could just be like in those spots, right? And so I was like, let me just like try to be great and try to fulfill what people set me up to be for, right? Or like, you know, and then I was like, same thing with the kids at summer camps. Was like, well, we always say like we don't educate enough. Like, well, what if I build this summer camp that doesn't have to be funded by a grant up, you know, at first, right? Like literally I paid for it out of my own pocket. I was like, this is going to be easy. I'm going to just pay for it. It's going to be great. And like, obviously it's harder. But I was like, if I build this and community pays for it, then they've said it's valuable just by, you know, them paying for it. But then I can then go to all these places that are underserved and I can be like, boom, here's the programs, and I can start that pipeline and I can just build it within the community. And like the person running it is a person who cares about that diversity. It's not somebody who's like donating it for like a tax write-off. So in that way, I'm actively helping, but I'm like kind of like behind the scenes. So that's kind of how I feel like my role as, you know, now I kind of more embrace it more. It's like, hey, I'm actively going to make a program that's going to target, you know, minorities and try to help, you know, people in that are underrepresented in these fields. And I'm going to actively be awesome at my, you know, in my engineering life because, hey, I'm going to be the manager and I'm going to give everybody equal opportunity to get whatever job is available. So that's kind of how I've seen it. Even though sometimes I do feel bad because I'm like, man, I should have went out and marched, or I should have went, like, so it's kind of like, am I really doing it? I mean, I guess I am. Right. So, I guess I'm trying. I'm trying to do a little something here. So that's how I kind of view myself, is I'm pushing it maybe from not an overt angle of like, hey, he's out here definitely, you know, championing. It's like, yeah, I support. And from the other end, I'm hoping like at some point, like, I don't know, Corey Billionaire, right? And it's like, hey, who's going to donate to all these programs? Who's going to do all these things? It's Corey, right? I'm going to pull that string, and it's not going to be a thing, right? So I'm trying to push it so that we do have backers in the community from the other direction. And then,
yeah.
And it's, you know, it's all, you know, happy utopia.
I mean, you know, it sounds like you're doing it to me. You know, one of the reasons why we're doing this podcast is to help people to see the different forms that I believe activism takes. Yes, we have our activist icons, but activism can look very different. It can be, you know, how you are raising your children. It can be how you're using your unique talents and skills. And I think, you know, us being able to look at what am I good at? How can I make a difference? That's what I want to do on this podcast, because that's exactly what you're doing. And Corey, I want you to tell everyone a little bit more about your summer camp, because your summer camp sounds so freaking fun. And even backing up a little to like, how many kids did you start with and how many kids do you have now? Like, how many years has this
been? Oh man, this has been like
incredible.
This has literally been an adventure. This has been like a whole Netflix, docuseries? Like, man, I think sometimes when you start something, you have to be like naive on purpose. And so I was like, yeah, man, you know, actually, I'll be back up, like, you know, because I thought it was easy, but I'll tell you why I thought it was easy. So I did all the tutoring and stuff in undergrad and grad, and I've done all these programs. So when I went to, you know, Work Life in San Diego, I was like, hey, you know, let's see what's here. I'm going to concentrate on, like, I'm not going to get into all this stuff again. Like, that's what I said. Like, you know, I'm not going to go. I'm just going to be good at my job. I'm not going to get into all these things. I'm just going to do my job for once and stop doing all this stuff. Right. And then so my son was taking this class. It was like a Lego engineering class or something like that. And I was like, he came up on my, you know, the flyer. He's like, what, first grade? And I'm like, yeah, yeah, engineering? Cool, cool. I definitely want my son in that. How much it costs? Ooh, that's like, that's kind of a lot of money, but I got it. So I'm going to put him in there. I'm going to put him in this class because I have it and I'm going to pay for it because that's what happens. You know, people pay for their kids to do the best they can. So I put him in there and it's like first grade. And I come on saying, man, well, do you get to take home Legos? Do you? Like, what did you learn? You know, like, you know, I build stuff. Like I'll come on saying, what am I getting out of this? So then I looked online at the other, you know, camps in the area, and like, and it was like, you know, if you want the top of the line camp, it was like $1,000, you know, $1,500, $2,000 a week for a tech camp. And I'm like, this can't be life. This is definitely targeted at like the most, what is it? What's the right word? It's the most like, I don't even want to say rich. I want to say like the people who have the most resources.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the most PC way to say it, right? It's targeted for kids who have the most resources. Like you're at,
oh my,
it's time to eat. Okay. Tell mom just a second. Let me finish this call. Okay. You gotta put that on the podcast too. Put that on the podcast.
Going in. This is a pandemic life, yo.
Dad, come eat. Okay, fine. I just talk. So I just felt like it's just very for people who have a lot of resources. I happen to be in a place with resources, so I'm going to give my kid the opportunity. And I was like, all right, well, we can do better because there's nothing for kids who, like, there's nothing in between. There was like these one-off STEAM days, one-off coding days, and there's like, then there's like, that's it. There's nothing for elementary, but there was a lot for like, hey, if you're like late middle school, if you're high school and you want to learn this or that, here's this program, here's the certification, here's this or that. And I happened to have, when I was in school, they said, oh, well, it was first tutoring, then it was like, help out with the summer program, then it was like, write the summer program, then it was like, make and build and tell me what to buy the summer program. So I had like experience with that. And so I was like, all right, well, let's start off and see if I can pull something off, because there's nothing for elementary kids. And I feel like I can put something in that gap here where it's going to be a progressive curriculum where they can like learn and keep going forward. And I feel like I have an advantage because I can just write whatever I need to write because I don't have to pay for curriculum. And this might work. This is quote unquote easy. So, you know, I went and lobbied to the principal. I'm like, hey, I'm doing this like technology thing for kids, right? Can I do this after school program? He's like, cool, try it out. So I started off with 10 kids. I went to school, I started off with 10 kids. I had to give 2 scholarships, kids that he just found, and that he was like, hey, I need these kids to have opportunities. Like, hey, you know, it's all good. I think I might have charged him like what, $80 or something. I don't know. It was something super insignificant. Oh, I shouldn't say that. It was something not as much as the other kid.
Yeah.
Any money is significant, right? But I bought a bunch of tablets. I bought a bunch of robots. What? No, I think the first iteration I bought a bunch of tablets, and just some basic supplies, and I taught it. And it was like six weeks, something like that.
Wow, $80 for 6 weeks? That's amazing.
Well, it wasn't every day. I think it was maybe like 1 or 2 days a week.
Yeah, but still, like, that's awesome.
6 weeks, and I was like, I was there. I was like, the day. And then I remember I went to the auditorium, and they did like the like Friday like lunch talk or whatever, or Friday like, hey, kids, this is what's coming. It's going. I was like, hey, kids. And I was like, do you like games? And everyone was like, yeah. And I was like, come to my after-school program. And then so I got the kids. And then I was like, you're going to make games and stuff. I'm going to build apps. It's going to be cool. So we did that. And then afterwards, I said, all the parents, you want to come back? And so every one of them came back. And I was like, ooh, okay, we might have something here. And so I was like, well, how do I make this summer camp? And so I couldn't get it at that school. So I had to go around to different middle schools and say, can I have a summer camp at your middle school? And I had to like go and like talk to principals. And I was like, by the way, I work down the street. I'm an engineer, right? By the way, I'm good at this professionally and I can teach. So I found one principal who said, this is good for our community. Let's do it. Went to that site that summer that I turned around like 3 months. That summer, I might have had maybe like, I'd say like 15 kids or so, 15 to 18 kids maybe. And then I was like, okay, this works. This is kind of cool. I wrote the curriculum. One of my best buddies from college was the camp director. And I was like, we got this. I'm just buy stuff. And like, you know, we kind of broke even. The next year we did it again. And it was like, and we like actually like made a little money. And I was like, oh, this is easy. Boom, I'm going to expand. Then I was like, well, where are people coming from? And it was like, nobody was coming within a 20-minute like radius. So like, I did like my little nerdy thing. I like went on Google. I got the Google Maps API. And I was like, oh, I'm going to write a program and I'm going to scan all the people all from where everybody came from, find their schools. And I'm going to like plot point how far it took for them to drive, right? So if you look at that map, it was everybody was within like 20 minutes, most like 10, 15 minutes. There's like two tiger parents that would come from like 30 minutes away because their kid has to be in this or that. And I had the worst flyer, by the way. It was this Microsoft Word document, stock image flyer. It was just bad. I look at that, I'm like, oh my God, that was embarrassing. But anyway, they came to camp anyway for some reason. And yeah, so like, then we went and we just kind of made it happen. And I was like, where are people coming from? And so once I realized that, I was like, okay, well, I have to make a little like radiuses around San Diego and I've got to make sure they overlap. So no matter where you are, you're going to be 15, 20 minutes away. And the next year we've got three camps and one was in Mira Mesa, one was in Kearny Mesa, one was in, and I was like, the one was in like Carmel Valley. Okay. So I was kind of spread out. And then my naive self, like I got San Diego and then everybody was like, that's not even South San Diego. You're not even down in like Chula Vista area, Nashville. You're not doing anything. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I'll get there. And then so I put up with the YMCA. This is literally me going, sending emails, talking to administrators, just like lobbying. And like I'm like, okay, I'm off. Like have a lunch break from 11:30 to 1. Let me drive to the YMCA and catch
more basketball.
Yeah. Can't hoop anymore. Right. Let me go and catch the administrator at the site. Right. And I would have to go catch the person there and say, hey, by the way, I sent you an email. And they're like, oh, yeah. And then so then I would like chop it up with them. And yeah, it was just organic. I had to go because like it's hard to say no to somebody in their face. It's different. Right. If I send an email, it's like, yo, we're not doing that. But it was like I had to go to their, you know, and ask him like, hey, I'm just trying to do this. I'm out here. Obviously, I don't have to be, but I want to help. I want to do this thing. Same thing with flyers. It was a battle to get flyers to schools. You don't understand the battle it is to get an administrator to say, I'll put the flyer in the school. This is ridiculous. Call all the schools. How many counts do I need? How do I get it approved? What needs to be on the flyer? They say yes. They say no. You kind of you just battle them for like a good couple of months. It's just ridiculous, but I battled it. And so eventually, you know, it was one camp to three camps to 2 years ago, well, 3 years ago, it was 10 camps. And then we had COVID happen and it was another, that was supposed to be two virtual camps and it was 10 virtual camps.
The virtual camp story, you made the news for that. So you need to tell me how that happened. So just as Corey's telling the story, like, this is incredible what he's doing, his determination, like his vision. He's like, I'm going here, I'm going there, I'm making this because he has a vision and he wants to make a difference. Okay, go. COVID came.
You make it so nice and shiny. So yeah, keep pumping me up. How do we get the news feature?
How did you even innovate? Like most camps didn't happen. COVID camp. And you took kids to, like, kids didn't just, like, show up on their computer. They had physical things to, like,
do. Yeah, that was a year. Because I was, like, because it took me forever. Like, so people don't know this. Usually, every year, I kind of, you know, camp's going to happen every year. But, I need this, it's almost like a cartoon. And, like, they have, like, a brain, like, they have, like, a bubble, like a thought bubble. And, like, things are going into the thought bubble. And then they say, like, I got it, right? So like every year around November or so, I kind of know what I want to do, right? And then, you know, I was like, okay, I know what I want to do for sure. And then I was like, yeah, okay. This year in camp, this is the new curriculum because every year I like new stuff happening and like it's tech trends. And then so we did that and then we got to March. It was like, I think March was like right when it hit, like everything shut down. And I was like, uh-oh, like, we, how are we going to do all this new stuff? We don't have any fairs. We don't have anything else. And I was like, new thought bubble coming. How do we make this happen? And it took me like a month or two. Then I was like, I got it. We've got to make this. I think I told people, like, how do I do virtual things but make it not suck? Because I was like, have you ever been on like a virtual, what is it like? Well, I think I said, like, even college kids can't handle in-person lectures, right? So you're going to tell me a kid's going to handle a virtual whatever for an hour? Not happening. And I was like, how do we make this so it's not going to suck? It's a STEM camp. So then we're like, I know, we're going to send kits to every kid, and we're going to drop off a robot in every kit. And depending on the theme that they're going to have for each camp, because that's what we end up changing camps to be, it used to be mobile technology camp, then it was technology adventure camp, because I was like, let's get everybody more involved. I don't want it to be so niche. I want it to say, it's an adventure. Please come and hang out. And whatever, you could be YouTuber, AI, robotics, whatever. So it's like, okay, make sure no matter what, as part of their core curriculum, they get a robot, whatever their theme is, they get something there. So if it was YouTuber, they got a little tripod. If it was tech entrepreneurship, they got the markers and the poster board so they can make their business idea thing, right? And so we deliver those. And so we have to organize, how do we deliver these kits to the parents? How do we get the kits back so they don't take all our robots, right? And then, so that's one logistical level. And then another was like, well, now how do we make the campaign not suck? And then so it was like, all right, well, we're going to have a group call for an hour and have them all hang out, but just start off with icebreakers. And we're not going to do the formal teacher. We're going to just demo. And then we're going to have them get started. Then we're going to take a break. Then we're going to demo, have them get started. Then we're going to take a break. And then we're going to do something fun together, like a game together. And then we said, what makes camp special is that we get is the one-on-one interactions, right? And so it's like, so they're getting their, what's the buzzword of the day? Socio-emotional learning with the group call. And then we were like, all right, well, they need the teacher one-on-one. So we said, every student gets a 30-minute one-on-one every single day. Right. And so that's what kind of snapped. It was like, parents are like, what? My kid gets a one-on-one every day and they get the group call and then they got their synchronous time. And so we had all that together and then merged it with, so, you know, tutorial videos. So three touch points. We're either going to talk to you in group. We're going to have a tutorial video on how to do your project. And we're going to sync up with you later that day just to see where you are. How can we help best? It's not a big deal if you finish or not. Just, you know, did you try? And so that spun into something I didn't know was going to happen. And it was successful off of just saying, we need to make something not suck for the kids and make it exciting. And it was only supposed to be like two or three camps. I was like, we're going to try, but we don't know. And then it just caught fire because there people wanted something to do that wasn't like standard. Here, stand in front of a computer for 3 hours. So I was like, that's not right. So that's your story of virtual camps and how that was. Whew, that was an experience. So we learned a lot from that, and we still do some stuff. We're gonna have a virtual camp this year, so but only one, because, you know,
because
everybody wants in person. So, yeah, we do all that, but I also provided more access just to kind of bring it back full circle, because anybody could come, and we could deliver anywhere, right? And so my team is like, we're in San Diego. They're like, don't ship it, Corey. I'm just gonna deliver it. So like this like super team, the Watkins, so Dr. LeVar Watkins and Mrs. Watkins, they were like, we're just going to deliver all the kits to everybody on one. Like, they were like Santa of STEM kits. They were like, I'm going to spend Friday night and Saturday and drive around to the 15 kids, 20 kids who are in camp, and they come up with a route, and they would drop off all the STEM kits. Sunday would have orientation, and then they would go. And then on Friday night, they'll go pick them all up again. I'm like, come on, Sanya, are you sure you want to do this? And he's like, I got you, bro. I got you. That's the thing. I got you. I was like, well, if you got good people working with you, I didn't say working for you. I said working with you. Then that's what it is, because I couldn't do it by myself. So that was the story. There you go. Absolutely.
So, I mean, yeah, I'm just always amazed, but I've heard your story before, obviously. But I'm just always amazed by it because, you know, you're going through this like very specific thought process to like use your unique talent and skills. So, Corey, for people, like, not everyone's an engineer who's going to make a STEM camp. However, everyone does have something that they can use to help someone else when it comes to this anti-racist journey, and think about access for the communities around them, the people in their network or in their city, in their community, et cetera. So how does someone figure out the thing that they can do, in your opinion? How do they figure that out?
I guess, let's see. I mean, it's almost like, I would say it's almost like kind of how like we think about entrepreneurship, right? Mm-hmm. And then I know the price, I'm going to bring it back. Give me a second.
Okay. Stay with you.
Almost like entrepreneurship in that, what do they say? Necessity is the mother of invention. Is that what people say? Right.
Yeah.
I hope I got that right because it's recorded. please be right. It's almost like you just look, you know, just do your everyday thing, right? What do you do? What do you like? What are you good at? And like, what is your everyday thing, right? No matter what, you're gonna walk around in that day from a business sense, you'll say, you know what? This was really annoying. I wish there was that. I wish there was this or that, right? That's what you would do if you were gonna have a business idea, and you would say, how can I fix that? I'm gonna fix it. Now I have a, you know, I'm going on Shark Tank, right? And then similarly, right, I think the question is, you know, how do you find your skills to contribute and kind of, you know, help the kind of like your anti-racist journey, right? Like how do you be an activist in that sense? Just look around, like what is your normal impact? I think you don't have to look for like, am I gonna impact millions and billions of people? You just have to say, what's my circle of influence, right? It's probably, if you go to work, it's probably those your coworkers. It's probably, for me, it's like my people on my WhatsApp chat, like my buddies there, right? My kids, the parents that I talk to at the soccer games, you know, or when I coach, right? Like, you know, or even when I go, and it's so funny, even when I go to like, so I'm like an El Pollo Loco fiend. So even when I go to El Pollo Loco or any fast food place, right? I know that was going to be random, but yes, that just came to my mind. No matter where you go, there's just all these opportunities, right? That's your circle of influence, like your community, where like you're just normal flow. I go to the grocery store. I go get some food. I, you know, do all these things. That's your circle of influence. So in that circle of influence, what do you do anyway, right? What do you work on? What's your passion, anything that you just like to do? So whatever you like to do, it could be, I love to sew. It could be, I love gymnastics. It could be, I love sports. It could be whatever. In there, there's just opportunities to have regular conversations with anybody, and stuff's going to come up, right? Stuff always comes up. Like it's the world. And so you can either choose to like ignore it, or you can just kind of have a conversation, or kind of like, you know, it's kind of water, quote unquote, water cooler talk. And in that sense, for sure, you could have an impact, right? And then as you kind of muster up that kind of motivation and like kind of that ambition, you can have a bigger impact by saying, you know, what do I feel like I do really well? Or what do I feel like is something that I can contribute? It doesn't have to be grandiose. And you just take that and say, for me right now, I'm gonna do this, right? And you do that. And then next time I'm gonna do this. And so just, you know, like any like weight loss journey, right? It's not, you don't lose 50 pounds in one day. Right. Like you don't become like, you know, super woke in 2 days. Right. It's just like, all right, I'm going to learn about this today. And like, I'm going to learn about Black Wall Street. I'm going to learn about, you know, this other event. I'm going to learn about this and this. And so you can build it as you go, and you can utilize your friends as you go. And that increases your kind of aptitude, increases your ability to have a conversation when the time comes. Right. And also, I think the biggest thing I like to say is, even if you don't feel like, let's say you do all that and you say, I still don't got nothing. All I do is like, I don't know. Like, all I do is write in my journal. Like, I don't talk to anybody. I just write in my journal. What if you said that? Right. Well, I feel like no matter what, you can have a contribution by, being able to understand what you know and what you don't know, and being very open about when you don't know something. That's what I tell my teachers a lot. And that's what I've learned. And that's what I learned about getting, when I got a PhD, was like, I don't know was actually like the strongest phrase you could ever say. Right. And so when you say, hey, like somebody asks you, hey, like, what do you think about, I don't know, Donald Trump did this, right? Cause that's always, that was a thing for like, what, 4 years, I think. I don't know. That was a thing. But like, and it's always an event. You can say somebody did this, right? And if you don't know, just be like, I actually don't know, right? Or like, if something like, you know what, like, I don't know what to think about that. Like, you know, And saying that gives you power to kind of have the conversation, keep going, get somebody else to, you know, the chance to put their opinion in or say, you know what, I don't have a strong opinion on this, or I kind of conflicted, and just go from there. And so, like, I really enjoy those moments where I'm in my group chat where I'm like, I actually don't know the answer to that one. But, you know, I can give you some initial thoughts, but, you know, can't hold me to that because I just told you I don't know. Right? So as long as you're open and, you know, when you don't know an answer, you can say, I don't know, or I'm thinking about it, or I'm conflicted about it. That's a valid contribution to open up an environment for a better conversation to go forward. So I think no matter what you do, just live your everyday regular life, and you can kind of start off as like a micro activist, right? And you can build and build and build up until you kind of get, you know, the knowledge first. So, you know, you keep building knowledge, somebody's going to ask you a question, you're like, you know what, I just read something about that. I can give a good answer. Or you can say, I don't know about that yet. What do you think? Or, you know, and you can go forward. So that's what I think is at least everybody can do to kind of contribute to that kind of activism, like that wokeness, so to speak, right?
I like that term.
Wokeity.
Yeah. I like the term that you use, a micro activist.
Yeah.
And thinking about this as small steps, and not just small steps, but a series of small steps where you're learning, where you're thinking, where you're open, where you're questioning, maybe where you're challenging, maybe not. But either way, you're open to the new experience and the new learning. And specifically that I don't know that you talked about, I agree. It is so powerful to say you don't know, because that invites information to come in. It invites a dialogue. And, you know, we're so conditioned to try to know everything, even when we don't know what we're talking about. We're so conditioned to like have an answer. Like in this space, especially when we're thinking about anti-racism and inclusion and equity, like if you don't know, like definitely just whatever.
Right.
And then it also points you towards a great Google search. Like, oh, I didn't know about that. Let me see what I can learn about that, so that next time this comes around, I can have something to say. And then, like as you said before, you know it, you do know about a few things. And this, you know, this is a lifetime journey. Nobody knows everything about any of this.
Exactly. I mean, that's it. That's the thing, right? You don't have to feel like you're the encyclopedia of activism, right? You know what you know, you know what you don't know, but you're willing to learn, you're willing to hear others' opinions. And then eventually, as you hear a collection of opinions, you form your own, right? You'll kind of, you know, hopefully start to separate fact from fiction, but at the very least, you'll form your own, but you've heard a lot of different perspectives. So with that, once you start hearing a lot of different perspectives, then it's hard not to have, you know, more empathy for what other people are thinking or what other people feel like. Right. So like in that point, then you can say, you know, shoot. And it's funny because I always say in the engineering life, in the kind of computer architecture life, people always say, well, what do you think about this? And I always was like, it depends. And I was like, and I came to find out, I was like, in an interview, the answer is probably always it depends. Right. Because it's always, okay, what's, you know, this constraint, that constraint, this constraint. Right. And that's almost like in everything. Right. So like, you know, what do you think about this thing? It was like, well, it depends. What perspective are you coming from? Right? Like, you know, and so you start to have that empathy and understanding different perspectives, then you're allowing yourself to say, hey, from this person's perspective, it came that way. And from this one, it came that way. So now I have a more like holistic view of, you know, what I am like advocating for and like the different partners there, right? Where it's very easy to say, you know, I support like Black Lives Matter, but then do something totally like, you know, I guess I should say totally, but like you could do something that would be kind of against that effort because you kind of thought you knew when you thought in like you assume that you knew what Black people thought, right? If you're like not Black, or even if you are Black, you say, I speak for Black people, so I know this, right? And you weren't open to saying, well, what did you think? This is how I thought about it. What do you think? And then you haven't heard enough perspective to kind of really get that holistic view. So I think that's very, very important to kind of get your I don't knows out there, get perspectives, you know, give yours, but you don't have to be so, you don't always have to be very strong on that I am right type of thing. Just give people perspectives, and eventually you hopefully develop more empathy for what people are thinking. And then, bada bing, bada boom, now you're an activist in itself, because now you can say, hey, when somebody says something kind of crazy, you'd be like, uh-oh, like, wait up. like you're like, wait up. Like, I don't know if I, like, rock with that. Like, it's funny, like, in our group texts and all these things like that with, like, my friends from over the years, people are different walks of life, right? And we've come from all these different stereotypes and biases and all these things that we, you know, we still kind of harbor, right? Because this is the world we grew up in, and that's kind of like, we got to take that shell off of us, right? And so, like, somebody says something, and then, like, it's funny, like, my group would be like, whoa, might not want to say that out loud, right? And then someone was like, what are you talking about? It's like, bro, like, don't you know that you can't, like, and then so it's an open space to kind of question people's, like, thought process, but we're not, like, saying, like, the person's bad or not bad. It's like, oh, like, that's not the way to think. Have you thought about it this way or that way, right? And so I think that's a very positive thing if you have that kind of circle of friends, but also understanding that everybody has all these different perspectives. And no matter what, that's cool, but I don't have to automatically agree with what he said. I can say, I don't know if I agree with that, bruh. Right? Like, or we shouldn't do that. Like, that's the bad take. Like, I understand, quote, like, in a sense, if it's just the boys, like, I understand locker room talk, but you might want to shelve that one. Right? Or I understand what you're saying and it's very stereotypical, but you might want to think about it in this other way. Mm-hmm. Just saying. Like, still got love for you, but just saying, this one is probably out of bounds, right? And then so that's how, you know, you kind of bring that up and you kind of keep, you know, I think it's easier for me to say, I don't rock with that, because I've listened to other people's perspectives. I say, I don't know. I say, like, all these, like, I don't mean to be honest, I guess, so you can edit if, like, if things go out of bounds, totally please edit. But, for, like, I've been super ignorant personally. And so this is something I say, I don't know about. I was super ignorant about, like, why it was offensive or not offensive for, like, what was it? Like, I think LeBron James had made, like, like, Jewish people have money joke or something like that. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, like, I guess that's like a racist trope or something. Right.
Sure.
Like, that's a perspective, yeah. Right. And so to me, I kept saying, like, but that's good that they have money, right? And I kept saying, like, but, like, I was just kind of ignorant. But my group, I was like, I don't understand this, right? Like, I'm not saying this right. Like, I just don't understand this thing. And then people were like, well, read this article, bro. Like, you, right. Like, you don't have any Jewish friends? And I'm like, nah, I grew up in Cali. And, like, in my school, I just happened to not. And so, like, my friends are just dropping articles on me, yeah, and saying, you can say this, you can't say that. And say, have you ever thought this way, that way? I'm like, I actually haven't. So I'm glad y'all kind of checked me. And I wouldn't go on along those lines, like, blurted out anyway, but I'm glad you kind of educated me on that. And I just didn't know. And I was like, I'm glad I didn't come out, and I wouldn't be a person to go and, like, say that joke anyway. But, like, I'm glad I was able to say, I don't know what's going on here, guys. Can you, since somebody enlighten me, please, so I can be better. So now somebody comes and says it to me, or somebody, like, now my kids say something, whatever. I'm like, yo, I know about that. Boom, boom. I know a little bit about that. So not everything. Here's a link. Here's this or that. And I'm better.
You're more aware.
I was able to say, I don't know. I was better because I would say, I'm ignorant in this sense. Mm-hmm. That's cool. I don't have to know everything. Please help me. Right. And so Anybody can do that. There's, you know, knowledge is free, and saying I don't know is free. And you can always learn. Right? Yeah.
I mean, it's beautiful that you have a safe space where you can have these conversations where nobody is being, like, shamed or, like, canceled for making a mistake. And at the same time, you all have this trust going where you can call each other out and then call each other back in too. Right. And so I think one powerful part of this walk when it comes to anti-racist thought and action is interrupting racism that's happening around you, even if it's interpersonal, even if it's unintentional, even if it's in a conversation with people that you love and care about. This idea of just interrupting the momentum so that people can become aware and then can basically, like, reprogram what they thought was okay, but they didn't know, with something that is much more inclusive and accurate and not a stereotype or a trope or all those things, right?
Yeah, it can be an avalanche. I think that's what I think you kind of look back on, like, at least I look back on my life sometimes. I'm like, sometimes when, like, you didn't say anything, mm-hmm, you're like, dang.
Yeah.
That's like, I say that was weak a lot, and I know that's probably not the best thing to say, but I was like, man, that was weak. Like, I should have at least said something there. Or like, if we're in a situation where like my friends were doing something, I didn't stick up for them. I'm like, man, that was weak of me. Like, I kind of get down on myself, and like, so these situations where I'm like, man, like, if you, like, it's an avalanche. If you let it go one time, then you let it go again, and it's comfortable now
to let it go.
And now it's like boom, boom, yep. boom. It's like, dang,
much harder.
So it's like, yeah. So it's like you kind of be able to interrupt, like you said, and kind of gracefully. I know it's kind of hard because like, why I got to be graceful, but like gracefully take it to like an alternative view and say, you know, just so you know, I'm not rocking with that perspective, or that one is different, or if I'm saying it, you know, likewise, right? And so sometimes easier said than done when you have very like open-minded people, and it's harder when like maybe you have like more close-minded people that are like, I believe this and that's it, and you're like, all right, well, right, that's a little different conversation, and that's a little different, like, you know I'm standing on this and you can believe this, and okay, if you can believe it, but this is why I believe that, right?
Sure.
But at the very least, you spoke up to that and you said, yeah, there's a different way. And hopefully the person respects you enough to say, dang, like, this is a person that I know, I love, or I respect for XYZ, and they think this way. So maybe
that.
Yeah, maybe that sums way. Up.
Uh-huh.
Maybe sums up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
It's not always easy, but it's something, at least for me, it eats away at me if I feel like I missed a moment. And so I just try to miss less moments, or I try to get back to them and say, you know what, I just did it. Like, let's get back to that real quick, right? Because mm-hmm. you just don't want to miss too many moments. Like, you want to meet the moment, so to speak, in life, mm-hmm. right? Not miss it.
Yeah.
And so I like the interrupting part, right? It's like, nope, I don't rock with that. Or nope, let's think about this a different way. Like, what if, right, hypothetical scenario, right? Which honestly can get you in trouble with hypotheticals, but what if, think about this a different way. So anyway, I think, you know, kind of getting back is, you know, I don't know, is powerful. Getting empathy is powerful. Having that circle, but then again, being able to interrupt what you think is wrong and saying, I don't think this is right, right? I'm not trying to beat you up right now. I just don't think this is right. Right? Like, can we talk about that? Can we clear that up a little bit? Like, you know, no matter what, I'm not, we're like, we don't have to fight, but this we can debate on. How about that? Mm-hmm. So usually, you know, that's fair. It's all good with that.
Yeah. No, I love it, Corey. Thank you so much for all the practical examples, right? You were just full of examples of how this plays out in real life and how you've seen it play out for you. I so appreciate you. I know that we could talk for like hours about so many things.
Oh, man. I'm like, we just getting started, yo.
I want to talk about why you talk to your kids about, like, there's so many things. I know. I was looking at them. I was like, I can't ask that question right now. We'd be about to wrap. But Corey, thank you so much for being here. Can you tell people where they can find you, where they can find more about your incredible tech camp, if they want to connect with you?
All right, cool. I think, connect with me. First, you can just go online, Dr. Corey Sewell. You'll probably find me, Corey with the K, K-O-R-E-Y. Obviously, LinkedIn's easy. That's where you'll find my professional life, my engineering life. If you want to learn about the summer camp, it's for, you know, we call them littles, middles, and bigs, right? So littles, you know, first, second grade. Probably like third grade, probably like littles, like middles. And like, it's funny, it's like fourth, fifth, sixth, you know, seventh, and then bigs are like anything eighth and above. And it's like, you know, if you want to, you know, get into any of that stuff, techadventurecamp.com. Tried to make it a nice catchy name for you, techadventurecamp.com. And what we want to do is we want to emphasize exposure, not exhaustion, right? How do we expose your student, you know, your child, your preteen, your teenager, to something cool? How do we get them excited about it? How do we get them doing some hands-on things, as far as hands-on technology, education, but how do we get them doing practical things and having fun? And then if they're exposed to it, right, you know, we don't have to exhaust it. They're not gonna get a degree in a week or 2 weeks, but they can have a lot of fun. And based off of that, they'll have the energy to say, you know, mom, dad, cousin, uncle, auntie, whatever, can I do this or that? Or, hey, I'm interested in this major. Or, hey, I'm interested in this trade. Because you've had those positive experiences. So all Camp is about is how can we rack up a bunch of positive experiences and various STEM topics, right? If you can do that, then we've got more people that are interested in the field. Or at the very least, no matter what, like, we might not be creating more scientists and engineers all the time, but you might be creating people, or create, I shouldn't say creating, but helping facilitate students that value it, right? Like, they can make a gem and say, you know what, with this gem, I'm going to need this website, or I'm going to need, you know, I'm going to be aware of, like, the COVID implications with this gym. So I'm going to do this or that, right? So that's what we want to do. And so I think that's a very positive thing for the community. And, you know, then bring it to as many Black and Brown folks as I can. Just keep pushing it out there. So techadventurecamp.com. Look us up. We have a lot of stuff every summer. And then we're branching out throughout the school year with a lot of professional development. After school programs and workshop. Bam! There you go.
Welcome, Corey. Thank you so much again for being here. This was great.
Awesome. Well, man, I feel like we need more time. So rack it up for round two whenever you need. Awesome. It's always fun. I appreciate that you came up with this Inclusion First podcast, the whole journey. I've been watching from afar and kind of clapping myself. So I'm glad that you're doing that. And, you know, whenever we talk, it's like, you know, when are we gonna stop talking? we'll talk to the end. So it's all good. I would always enjoy it.
Awesome. Thank you for listening to the Inclusion First podcast. We are always collecting and answering your most important questions on anti-racism. So if there's something on your mind, head on over to theinclusionfirstproject.org and click on Ask a Question. We'd love for you to give us your like, your share, your follow, and especially your review, wherever you find us. Thank you so much again for listening, and we will talk to you next time.